Everybody wake up.
Time to wake up. Time to start the day. Wake up late with Dougie. It's the only
wake
way.
Wake up late. Now everybody. Wake up late. Everybody. Wake up late. Wake up.
It's late. Wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie.
It's time to wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. What rhymes with Dougie? He's just so funny.
It's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Live from Danger Studios. Coral Springs, and now you know.
We're the hottest show in this place.
Wake up late now, everybody.
Wake up late
now, everybody.
Wake up late
now, everybody. I said one, two,
three. Everybody wake up.
Live from Danger Studios in Coral Springs, Florida, it's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Starring Dougie Almeida.
Yeah.
Now, let's start the show.
Why not? It's a good idea. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. I'm Dougie Almeida, and I'm here in Danger Studios with a comedian and a good buddy, and I call him my brother now, Mr. Steve Marshall.
Hey.
And
we're in Danger Studios.
That's right. Rich Voss says, why do you call it Danger Studios? And comedian club owner, poker player, Mr. Al Martin.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show,
great
guys.
Great to be here. Yeah.
Back. You guys have been here before.
Yeah, it's always the most awkward moment when you're on a radio show and I never know what to say. Hello, yeah. You know, the first beat of the show.
It's interesting because some people are like, what's up? You know, they have that radio voice.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to, like, perhaps this is the way to do it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean,
I'm just glad to be in Florida right now with the way the weather is in New York. So.
People, you know, there's talk about, I was watching a video on Facebook how there, I guess it was in Houston or somewhere like that, where there was ice on the roads and people actually turned around on the highway,
right,
went the wrong direction to try to get off.
Yeah, they don't know how to deal with it, you know. And, you know, you need places like Buffalo to give, like,
where I went
tutorials.
To school, right.
Yeah.
So that's like, that's what all the Buffalo people and people are saying. They're saying, like, this is nothing, you know. Right. I mean, like, in New York, everybody panics.
Well, it's like in Atlanta when they get, nobody knows how to deal with it there. And it was funny, a few years ago when they had that snow, people are driving off the highway and getting out of their cars, standing in the middle of the road like, this is wrong. Like, yeah, standing in the middle of the road's wrong, you idiot.
It's like levels. People in Buffalo make fun of people in New York that they can't handle the snow. People
right.
in New York make fun of people in Florida. People in the Antarctic make fun right. of Buffalo.
That was a good one. I don't know how you came up with that one.
A bunch of Eskimos making fun of it. Like, you guys don't know how to build
Canadian
an igloo.
At one time. You know?
Go with the analogies.
Thank you.
Perfect. But yeah, it's nice, you know, and it's nice. That's why, you know, as a comic, people always ask me, when are you moving to L.A. or when are you moving to New York? Now, I can honestly say that I'm never going to move to L.A. You know, I just not, it's not my place. It's not, you know what I mean? I don't want to deal with earthquakes and the end of the world and fires.
Mudslides, Santa Ana winds.
Yeah, it's just not, you know what I'm saying? And but New York, where I'm from, originally born in Queens, you know, I you know, I'd love to, you know. But and I love when I go to New York, I love being in the city, and, oh, this is great. I could be out all night. I don't have to worry
the
about
energy.
Driving. And
yeah.
But after about a week or two of being here, you know, I miss my space.
Right.
You know, I miss the fact that I can walk down the hallway without my shoulders bumping into the sides. And I like being able to take a dump in a bathroom where I don't have to, like, have to do yoga to reach and wipe my own ass.
Right. And we appreciate that, too.
I'm glad. I'm a helpful guy.
Oh, God.
You know what I mean? But it, like we were talking about that, like Vegas, when you go to Vegas, I can only tolerate about a few days in Vegas. After that, when I miss color.
I used to go to Vegas all the time, and now there's gambling anywhere. So,
right.
Like, what, unless there's a new building or a new attraction in Vegas, what do I need to be there?
Exactly. You know, and I'm going back, I guess it's in March, for the World Series of Comedy Satellite. And I was telling you, like, I worked at Laugh Factory in Reno. So I talked to the booker, and he says, "We'll showcase you. Just let me come when you come back next. We'll showcase you to get regular work." And then it was weird because, and let's talk about something like TV credits. So they had mentioned, like, I have a lot of people that have a lot of TV credits that are ahead of you. So I'm like, well, I got a little TV credit from Jimmy Kimmel, you know, where I was on the Wall of America bit. That counts. And you know what? But I don't, as a guy, like, I don't want to be that. Like, I'm not. I don't ever want to overstep my bounds. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a professional. I'm always going to be, you know, professional in a sense. So I didn't want to say, well, I'm funny, you know, I wasn't going to do one of these things. I'm like, all right, that sounds great. I love the opportunity, and I'll definitely let you know when I can showcase. And I know I don't have the credits, but I'll gladly follow anybody who features. for you. You know what I mean? I don't have any fear of feature.
You know, with credits, there are comics that I know that are doing this for 30 years that might not have a lot of credits, but they've got 4 minutes to do on a showcase in Vegas or
right.
Reno. And
now, I respect as a business person a draw.
Right.
You know, you want to, especially as a headliner. You know, you want to be able to fill people. That's important. Without that, the club doesn't stay open. Without that, nobody gets stage time. Right. We all understand that.
Right.
Right. At the same time, you know, there's been this thing in comedy where people have a video or, you know, they're an internet sensation, but then they get on stage and they're horrible. They don't have, let's say, the chops in a sense, like a Rob Delaney. Remember the guy who was on Kimmel who bombed incredibly, but he had like a million Twitter followers?
Well, I'll give you a classic story. When I had the club here in Boca, New York Comedy Club at one time, I brought Buddy Flip. You know Buddy Flip?
I know the name. Yeah.
I bought Gene Perrone on Facebook. But I brought him down to Middle at that club, and I brought a person that's very popular on the New York circuit, has done a million TV shows, to close.
Right.
Now, you know, being one of the better comedians in Manhattan, where you only do 20 minutes, versus being a road warrior that has to do 45 minutes, like Buddy was accustomed to, two very different things on the road. So this comic came down, who's a hotshot in New York and is one of the best comics in the country, came to Boca and he walked three quarters of the room on the Friday night. So my partner came over to me and he said, "Hey Al, what are we going to do here? This guy can't walk two Saturday night shows." So I went to Buddy and I said, "Buddy, would you mind if we flip flop the order? I can't pay you any more money, but can we flip flop the order?" And Buddy said, "Sure, I'd love to close the show." And then I went to the other comedian. And I said to him, "Listen, we're not going to cut your money or anything, but you kind of saw what happened here tonight. This audience maybe, you know, wants it a little different kind of comedy."
Right.
And he didn't say anything at the time, but it turned out he didn't.
He got upset about it?
He got pretty upset about it. But, you know, there's an old saying in horse racing, horses for courses, you know.
Right.
Certain people do better on the road, even though they're not the hot thing in the big city.
Right, right.
You Buddy flipped him. Maybe that's how he got his name.
And Buddy crushed for three shows.
I remember seeing, now I had heard this from an old-time comedian about Rodney Dangerfield. And one night I went into Catch a Rising Star, and Rodney went on, you know, because they're going to ask him to go on. Rodney was not dressed like Rodney, by the way. He had he was dressed like he was at the track at Hialeah, to be very honest. He had the polyester white shirt on, the beige slacks, the white shoes.
Picture Easy Money.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. Hey, Mike.
Hey, I tell you, you're all right. You know what I mean?
What's that famous line at the end where he says, "I've been kissing her ass for years," you know, not whatever.
Yeah. I remember that line.
He goes on stage. And this is Catch a Rising Star. I mean, this is a major club at the time.
Yes.
And he just goes up, and the first thing out of his mouth is he looks around and he goes, "Hey, if your act goes over here, you ain't got no act." And I guess what he was trying to say is, I think we forget that 15 minutes is not an act.
Right.
And that I think we also forget, like when I went to Birmingham, Alabama, everybody was like, "Oh my God, what are you going to do there?" I thought Alabama was the United States of America.
Forget 15 minutes. There are comics now that are getting sets on various TV shows that when I try to book them for a 20-minute Manhattan spot, they don't have 20 minutes.
Really?
They don't have it, but they're on national TV.
I know somebody, again, we're kind, we're not mentioning names. She's 10 minutes, 12 minutes in, asking the audience where you're from.
Right.
How can you not do 20 minutes of straight monologue? And she was a monologist, too, by the way. She wasn't, you know. So I'm just trying to say, like, everybody should just realize and respect everybody. In the old days, the New York acts, talk about hating, they would hate the road acts.
Correct.
Right? Then the road acts would hate the New York acts.
Right.
The Long Island acts hated the New York acts.
Right.
The New York acts acted like Long Island didn't exist.
Wasn't that great, all that hate and comedy?
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's in politics and Facebook.
Oh, boy.
You know, yeah. So we were talking about this, Dougie, to tie into that. I mean, everybody's got an opinion and no expertise in what they're talking about.
No.
You know, I barely know what I'm doing.
Right.
I barely mastered myself, which I can't say I mastered. What am I going to do getting involved in, you know?
Yeah.
I like a person that's earned $8,000 in comedy average over the last 12 years, getting on Facebook and figuring out how to solve all the world's problems.
Right. That's what we were talking about. Well, the last, you know, Al said to me many years, I mean, we've this is, listen, talk about you're my brother. This is like, I don't know what's, we're like twins. You know what I mean?
Right. He's my
grandfather. You know.
He's my perverted uncle.
But he would always, Al always said to me, listen, you know, I love when he.
We know each other 30 years.
30 years 30 we years. Know each other. So we horse around so much. But then every once in a while I go, listen, when a comedian tells you something, whenever, you know, he goes, listen, Marshall, whenever a comedian tells me something, I do the opposite. Go ahead, talk, tell him.
Yes, right? This is true. This is true. Yeah. Whenever a comedian, you know how I saved myself a lot of money about 20 years ago in the market? Was the market was on a very similar tear to where it's at now. And a comedian came into the green room at the time. It's just a miracle that any of my clubs had a legitimate green room. but came into the green room at the time and said to me, Al, you're not going to believe this. I bought a whole bunch of stocks, and I bought JDS Uniphase and Qualcomm. That Monday, I called my broker, and I said,
get me out.
Sell 90% of my positions.
A contrarian position. Exactly.
He goes, why are you doing that? I mean, the market's flying. Two words, irrational exuberance, and some comedian who knows crap about the market just lectured me on what stocks
to buy. Absolutely true. All my people don't know a lot of behind the scenes. Al and I, and Al would always say, what are you worried about? There's another famous saying. What are you worried about what they're saying about you? He said, do they pay your Con Ed bill? Do they pay your rent?
Right.
Yeah.
And I said, no. And he says, all right, so what's the big deal? What are you listening to them about?
Right.
You know, so this ties into you with, you know, who cares their fakakta comments about you? You're a fine, you know, if people don't know, and I'll
listen,
say it.
Somebody made a rude comment to him, and I'll never forget it. And may I talk about this?
Sure.
So he's on Facebook, and he's the kind of guy I truly respect in comedy. It's very easy to sit in your basement in your mom's house with your mommy paying all your bills. You know, you got nothing to do. You watch Netflix and order dollar pizzas all day and, you know, go out and do stand-up comedy five nights a week. Here's a man that's accomplished in his profession, you know, has a nice home and a family. And he has obligations, people he has to support. And in all of this, you know, he's taken it upon himself to pursue a stand-up career. Now, he's attacking it like a businessman, and I would do it the same way. You know, he's investing in himself a little bit, maybe even taking a loss a little bit just to open doors for himself. Mm-hmm. I get it. You know, mm-hmm. I see what you're doing. I understand it. And some idiot comedian gets on his page and goes, oh, you know, what are you boasting about being a middle in some third-rate club in Omaha and losing money? And I said to myself, you remember this comment? Yeah. You remember this idiot? I said, what a douche. I mean, to make a comment like this. I mean, this guy's working his ass off to try to make it, and he's making solid inroads. I think he came in second in that World Series. Didn't you come in second?
I came in. I was a finalist in 2015.
Right.
Top eight and everything. Sure. You know.
I mean, so it's not like he's not doing anything. This is a very tough business to crack. I mean, I've seen people with tons of money. Remember Abe Hirschfeld, who used to own parking lots in New York, ran for mayor nine times? He came over to me and goes, how do I make it in comedy? I go, you got to do open mics. I can't do open mics. What are you kidding? I'm running a business empire.
Yeah.
I said, well, that's the only way to make it. How else are you going to make it? You got to hone your material.
Right? I don't just say this because you're my friend, but I never saw you boast. If I have to see one more post, killing it, let me tell you something. Half the people that are writing killing it never really heard killing it.
Yeah.
You don't know what killing it is.
Yeah, you're right about that.
And Dougie didn't post. You know, he'll just post, I was here. Look, you have to promote yourself. Have to let people know that you're rising and being successful, you know. But I didn't see anything like, I never saw you post anything like, oh, my God, I blew the guy off the stage.
He's promoting his gigs. He's working hard at it, and I respect that. And this idiot just comes out of
and he's everywhere.
Miserable creep comes out with this comic. Do you know the guy?
Yeah, and, you know, here's the thing, and I talked about this on the show in our Florida comedy scene. And for the most part, you know, I think in any industry, you're always going to have the wannabes. You're always going to have the people that are frustrated, disgruntled, you know what I mean? Because it is a hard business, to say the least. And, You know, and I found out this in my life. Everything I ever got into, whether it was martial arts and fighting professionally, whether it was my business in the financial planning industry, whatever I did it because not to become successful in it, because I only know one way to do it. I'm going to do it right. I'm going to try to get, you know, I'm not going to waste my time. I was at an open mic the other night, and it was a challenging room, okay? It was a room where there was a bunch of old people at because they're waiting to go on their cruise. They stayed at this one particular hotel. And I'm like, wow, this is going to be, you know, this open mic is normally dirty. It's like off, you know, it's just, right. It's no holds barred kind of thing. And I thought to my, and some people had gone up and some people went up and they didn't connect or anything. And I just sat there and I go, and I was talking to this other comic who was asking me for advice. Great kid, this guy, Danny the Jew. I'm not being anti-Semitic. That's what they call this kid. And he always asks for advice. And I help the guy because he's doing what it takes to be good. And another comic comes up and they just said, I don't really care about the open mic. I don't right. care about this. I'm like, why the fuck would you waste your time driving here? Why would you prepare a set list? I go to an open mic for one purpose. One, A, usually to find new material or try to work something out, a connection, or try to find, you know what I mean? I'm doing something for my act, you know, number one. And number two, whenever I'm on stage, it's imperative to me to connect with the audience. Because that's, if it's a sports bar or something's going on, that is the challenge, to be so likable, so undeniable, that someone's going to stop what they're doing and look at you. That's what an entertainer does.
Right.
And you know, I'm explaining this, and the person's like, oh, well, you know, that's, I don't really care, and this and that. I'm like, then I don't get it. You know what I mean? I don't get, like, you know, what it's about then.
It's easier not to care. Do you understand? The easiest thing in the world is to not try and win the race. Now, you being a fighter in the ring knows, try going in the ring with the attitude that I don't care and getting your face tattooed. See, these guys never get their face tattooed. Yeah. There's no right. accountability. They never get punished for anything
punished.
They do.
They have their safe space.
Yeah, and it's just much easier to be lazy and not try. Look, for years, so, you know, I bring a camera. It started 10 years ago. I started recording everything. I get mocked mercilessly for bringing a camera. Of course, you know me. Next week, I've got two cameras. Right. Now, oh, look at this guy. He's got two cameras. Some nights I have three. Oh, he's got a three-camera shoot.
I love watching him set up his cameras.
Yeah, right?
It's great.
Right? So meanwhile, I'm setting up the cameras. I'm having good sets. Now, 5 years later, everybody's got a camera.
Look at
right?
look at Chris Murphy, a mutual friend of ours. This guy catalogs every show he does, how many minutes, how much audience reaction. Yeah. 30 years later, still doing this stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes it is like being an athlete. Sometimes, I don't know how much it helps doing these things, but these are like my little things I do before I go on the field. Like, Al, you saw me, my laces are not tied.
Right.
I don't usually tie my laces till I play. I'm still playing street basketball, and I don't like, that's just me. I don't tie till I play.
Okay. Nah.
You know what? It may have no meaning. I don't tie.
Don't tie.
What do you Although the only one piece of advice I have for Danny the Jew is, he might want to lose the Jew.
Yeah, it's going to limit your market.
You're not going to be getting jobs in Lebanon.
You know, Nebraska's out.
that segues into, can the MCs please take our introductions? Because it's talking about, you're too lazy to change your act for older people. You're too lazy to get an introduction. There's a reason that certain comedians have a certain introduction. I'm not politically correct. I'm not here to behave. So that I don't walk to people, let them know what they're going to hear.
You should turn it into a bit.
Yeah, so,
listen, you're going to get an extra 3 minutes here because I'm also going to play the MC because he just didn't do his job.
Right.
If they don't do it,
I come out and I have to give the intro. But what happened to me, I was in Jamestown, Pennsylvania, Jeanette, Pennsylvania, because I think it's the home of Curly of the Three Stooges, so I remember that. And the guy goes up and he goes, this next guy you're really going to enjoy, he's a real Jew. Right. Jeanette Pennsylvania, how does that help me?
Yeah. He's trying to sabotage.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
I tell comics, too. I said, listen, if you can't remember it, write it down.
Yeah, why don't they write it? They don't even write their material. I got a notebook for...
Horrible,
hi, everybody. I've got a notebook for a podcast. I get mocked for that, too. Tony at Dangerfield said to me, the owner, he goes to me, I knew Jim Gaffigan was going to make it because he always came in with a notebook. You notice everything you do in sports and comedy that looks like you're actually trying, they mock you for?
Right.
Heaven forbid... Right. Right. You go in a half hour earlier to kick the bag, or heaven forbid, whatever you're working on. You know what I mean. You only get mocked for working hard,
right?
For trying.
You know what? These people that mock, in 20 years, they're going to get the world they deserve, and we're going to be told to give a crap. So I don't care.
Well, that's what's happened. I mean, everybody. You know, we were talking about this, and we were talking about political stuff, and I'm just going to say, you know, I hate when I see anybody going through pain. I hate when anybody has sorrow. But I don't feel bad for people that brought it on themselves.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing if you something's befalled you that, you know, out of your control, you know, it's and I'm going to, like, this immigration thing, okay? My family came from Europe. My wife's family, being Asian, they go through processes to become citizens here. It's a lengthy
Correct.
Process. It's a lot of things you got to do.
It's called legal immigration.
Yeah, and all these kind of things. So when somebody shows me a video of this poor family that's being broken up after years of being in this, listen, I feel for the family. I feel for the family that this happened. But at the same time, as a responsible person, when somebody wants to, and then it's hard to see that video, okay?
It is.
But what I then lose it at is when somebody blames somebody other than the individuals for that occurrence. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, I get it. There's a way that you couldn't just ignore the fact that you're not a citizen. Did you? The fact that you didn't get caught, like, listen, there's a rule that you have to wear a seatbelt in the state of Florida. There's a lot of people that don't like to wear their fucking seatbelts. I get it. It messes up your shirt. It does something. I don't care. You know what I mean? There's a reason why people don't like wearing a seatbelt. There's a law. You're supposed to do it, but people don't do it. People don't do it because nobody gets pulled over for not wearing a seatbelt, right? So it's not being enforced. So they get away with it. You know what I'm saying? I don't need to do what you're telling me to do. Then they get into a car accident, fly through the fucking window, and die. Now I'm supposed to feel bad for that person. I feel bad that a person lost their life, but I don't feel bad that it happened because of their inability to do what needs to be done.
Right.
And again, people look at that and they're like, well, that's mean. No, it's not. If everybody took that responsibility, we wouldn't need as much welfare in this country as we do. We wouldn't need to be fucking putting together GoFundMe things for people that, you know what I mean?
Or we wouldn't be needing to take money out of your pocket that you worked hard for and you took chances
right.
and risks for to make to subsidize other people's lifestyle.
Who don't do what they're supposed to do.
Correct.
Well, what can the, because as we were driving here, you said, Dougie, when you give financial advice, you don't start, and it was great what you said. You said, I don't take somebody and tell them what they did wrong.
You know, one of the problems I had with the Obama administration, we all know nothing's perfect, right? You know, in hindsight, the Gulf War and the taking down Saddam Hussein may not have been a good idea. At the time, I was for it, right? In hindsight, it's always easy. I can't remember what comic or what TV show I said, Captain Hindsight. I think it was on Family Guy or something like that. Like, you know,
right.
It was fucking on. Let's go to Captain Hindsight. You know, he knows everything. It's always easy. But I don't have any respect for people that criticize the actions of others that say, that's wrong. Why would you do that? How come you did that? Why didn't you know to do better? That's a stupid idea because I'm an advisor in my professional world. So I'm the one who's got to outstep that. I'm the one who's got to come up with solutions. I'm the one that's got to give direction. I'm the one that's got to give answers. I can't go into a meeting with somebody and go, you know what? Whatever you've been doing has been horrible. Whose idea was this? How did you come to this conclusion? This is stupid. That's a bad idea. Why would you do that? That doesn't do anything. The only thing that's going to do is like, hey, I can see where you're at right now. Let's look at how we can fix this. Let's look at how we can change what's happened, and this is what we need to do. There's too many people out there in this goddamn country of ours that are critiquing, that are judging, that are just like that guy who said that thing about me.
Right.
You know, here's a schmuck that's obviously unhappy with his own, you know, his own life. He doesn't respect that I'm chasing a dream.
Right.
He has no idea what it's like, what it takes to become a successful comic. Why am I doing a show in Boise, Idaho for $250? Why?
Right.
Because of the experience of being in front of that crowd, the work and discipline of becoming a polished comic and not being struck by something, you know, as like I've seen so many comics deal with something that's gone wrong in a show. A heckler, something goes on, and they don't know how to handle it.
But Doug, this is also after you've already developed a successful career. Pay your bills, help your family, do what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're choosing to do this on your extra time at your extra expense. It should be none of that guy's damn business
right.
what you do.
He doesn't
you
know? Pay your Con Ed bill
I
like
mean,
he used
you,
to say.
You've done
That's
it
what
already.
He used to say to me. They're not paying your bills.
You're doing what you have to do, you know? And, you know, you've created this studio, and you've done anything you had to do. You've done it with the best of your knowledge and ability. And what's in this guy's business what
Plus,
you're doing?
I want to add something else.
He's miserable.
No matter what you want to say about Dougie, Dougie is only...
And I got a lot to say.
He's on, no, but Dougie has only provided work for people.
Right.
Think and, about this second. Tavolino's. Okay? This is all I don't see. Here's not a case of an individual. Look, everybody could rub somebody the wrong way. I'm sure I have. You know what I mean? But I don't hurt anybody's gigs. He creates gigs. He creates work right. for people. What's the guy doing that's negative? Right. If he wants
because
to go on the road.
Because a miserable person's going to say, this, instead of saying he created a gig and it's a nice gig, some
it's a great
comic
gig.
Will go, you know, he created a gig. Oh, what is it, a restaurant gig somewhere? He doesn't, you know, he doesn't pay that much
well, if
money.
If I had to hear that one
food.
More time, right.
I mean, really. I mean,
it's a great gig.
What are you doing, sir?
So I'm just saying, so I see nothing where Doug's name is attached to costing somebody a gig, costing somebody work. All I see is creating gigs. So what's the big deal? Same thing with
He's
you.
He's not bothering anybody. He's not asking anybody
how
to
many
subsidize
gigs,
his
how
life.
Many gigs did you create for people? How many thousands of gigs did you create for people?
And there are still people that hate my guts. Okay? And every time a new club... Oh, you want my pet peeve? Every time a new club opens in Manhattan... Everybody's running to that club. It's the greatest club in the world. It's the greatest thing in the world. I know what this club does. They pay a couple of guys a lot of money just to show like it's a big deal. Right. They pay a publicist a shit ton of money to get a bunch of meaningless write-ups and different little thing. They invite some guy who has a little comedy blog that 12 comedians look at and no regular audience
right,
looks
right,
at.
Right, right,
right.
And you know what? I think it's good. I think more clubs, the better. I think it's good for business to keep it alive. Can I just talk about these blogs and writing
well,
things?
Yeah. But
no, you finish. Go ahead. You take it.
It's all perception. But how does it make the clubs that have been paying you for the last 25 or 30 years to work, the comic strip and Dangerfields, myself, we've been here, and right. we've been, you know, so and then all you do is talk about all these new places that open that might not be in business in a year or two. So,
well, you know what's so funny? I see so many comedians that can't wait. Did you go over here? Did you go there? These are people that can't even get a regular spot
nobody,
at any...
And there's nobody in these new clubs half the time. They're sitting there with six people in the audience, but they've got some kind of major perception because they're getting write-ups and all the bigger guys are going over there because they're getting paid extra money under the table.
I got to tell you what I think is a very unusual write-up that happened to me. One night we were doing a show at a major New York City club. I was the headliner on the show. They wrote up everybody that went on, all right, except me. They wrote up people, I swear to God, that were hanging out at the bar. Right. People that were hanging. And you know when you click on the name as bold so you could see their website? People hanging out at the bar got write-ups. I went on stage, and that particular night, we had an LBGT comedian on stage. And this individual brought people that were very pro-gay, whatever. I live in a gay neighborhood, the West Village. And I did a show that, like most of my shows, that talked about gay people are great, Jewish people are great, LBG. And instead of mocking them, I couldn't have done a better piece utilizing them, why everybody should be accepted in America. Got zero write-up. People at the, because it's totally bullshit.
Right. It's total bullshit.
It's totally bullshit.
Total bullshit.
You know what I mean? Hmm. And then people use the credit of this, the credit of this, the credit. Can you imagine these two people going to write up? I was at the bar.
Our business deals on more bullshit perception than any other business around. When people come over to me and say, there's a comedy boom. I go, really? Have you been in the comedy clubs in Manhattan on a Tuesday night, a Wednesday night, a Thursday night? Half of them are empty. They're cutting back shows. Yeah. I mean, the perception is, I'll give you how perception is such nonsense. We did some of the young people. We did a show at Broadway Comedy Club on a Sunday night. It was a cold night. I honestly, in my mind, didn't expect there to be a lot of people. Until the very end, this producer assured me it would be a packed house, I brought in three waitresses. I was panicked. Nobody showed up. Nobody showed. Not one audience member showed. How do you go from expecting 150 right. people to, I can see you expect 150 people, it's right. cold, 60 showed up, or 40 showed up. Right. Nobody, not a person showed up. Do you know, I didn't know about this at the time, because I usually have cameras, I check in every
right,
night.
Right.
I didn't. That particular night, I was out to dinner, whatever. The next morning, I saw them all on stage on Facebook. They had taken a group picture of all the comedians on the show. I said, this must have been some success. They were on stage, right, taking this big picture. Oh, we had a blast at a packed house at Broadway Comedy Club. I was excited. I was counting the money. Right? Uh-huh. I got the report from my manager. Show canceled. There was not one audience member in there.
Wow.
Yeah. Al's a genius at this, too. I want to say, I get a kick. Maybe I just look for the positive in people. Al was one of the first to really have cameras and stuff like that that I know of. And it's so funny because I'm very lucky because I don't really drink. You know what I mean? So I was always allowed at the old New York Comedy Club to go behind the bar.
Right.
Now think about that. When a club owner trusts you to go behind the bar, I just want to say a couple of things. I see people that are working two shows at your club or where you are. They go behind the bar. They're doing sodas.
Go behind the bar.
Yeah.
There was a comic named Adam Leslie. Did you ever hear this story?
Yes.
May he rest in peace. So he's dead. I'll talk about him.
He was a funny guy, though. Can we say
funny
that?
Funny guy.
Let's get that first.
And I liked him. I loved him. He was a funny guy.
Yes.
You talked to him about stuff for hours.
Right.
One night he's at my club. He does a spot. And That week, we got a messed up order. We usually order 1 liter bottles of Jack Daniels, and the supply house sent me these humongous bottles of Jack Daniels.
Right.
So it was a very unusual product. And I was at the club, sitting at the bar, and I noticed, I said to the bartender, what happened to the big bottle of Jack Daniels that was there? She goes, I don't know, it was in the showroom. Maybe I didn't put it out. So I chalked it up to that. Maybe it didn't go out, whatever. I get a call from Dangerfields, the comedy club, the manager there, calls me up, Bobby, remember
right.
Bobby?
Yeah, Bobby?
Calls me up, and he goes, oh, do you have a, in a British accent, he goes, are you missing a bottle of Jack Daniels? I go, why? He goes, I got Adam Leslie here trying to sell me a discounted, humongous bottle of Jack Daniels. And I said, he came to my club, did a spot. I paid him for a spot. He stole a bottle of Jack Daniels and trying to sell it to another club, you know?
It's amazing to me, you know, how people, like, something like that. I hear something like that. I'm like, I know how hard it is to get into a club.
Right.
Every comic knows how hard it is.
Oh, it's so hard.
The work you got to do to get
in. It's so hard.
To a club.
Please underline that.
And let me just give a couple. There's some comics. And by the way, hi, Evan Weiss, who's a good friend of your guys.
Sure. I love Evan.
You know, there's two things. As a comic, I know there's a few things I got to do. Number one, first and foremost, I got to be professional. Right? You know, like, I get nervous. Like, we talked about it on the show the one time when I was in New York.
Right.
And I had gotten dates from Al. And I showed up at New York Comedy Club when you're booking that, and they didn't know I was supposed to be there, but everybody was nice, and they said, oh, never mind, you go up. And then I went to Broadway, a late show, and Dee was there, and she says, I don't have you on the list, but she was nice to put me on. So then I messaged Al, and I go, hey, Al, I just want to make sure everything's cool for the
right.
Broadway show, 9 o'clock show, which is the zenith of the weekend for me. I think this is, I got people coming. And I go, I just want to make sure I'm cool for that because I got people coming. And he goes, that ain't going to happen. I'll put you on next week. And I go, well, I had a spot, and then, you know. Now,
if you opened and said, I have people coming to that show.
Right, exactly.
I might have had a different response.
So I go, well, I had a spot. You know, he goes, listen, I can't do it. Don't tell me how to run my club. And I go, oh, shit. I was gingerly trying to be politely aggressive, and I was trying to pick my words. And, you know, right there. You know, anybody could have sent. I could have been a schmuck, and I go, "Well, fuck that guy." You know, what's he know?
That's what they do.
Which most people do.
Right.
They don't have the patience.
Right.
Yeah. And as a business person, I respect that. Hey, who the hell am I? You know. And what he said, I didn't take it personally. I took it like, he's right. I don't want to come off as being that. And then I just was, I said, well, I just want to, here's the email we sent with the dates that we.
Right.
And then boom, good. See you at 9 o'clock. I'm like, oh my God.
I was wrong. I made a mistake.
And then here's the thing. People can't admit when they're wrong anymore. People are so worried about who they are, how they're viewed. They can't own up. They can't own up to stuff.
Right.
And, you know, that's the thing that's amazing to me. You know, we had last night, and I'm not going to mention the comic's name because it changed things. And people just don't think. I don't mind if a complete moron does moronic things, right? I expect that. You know, it's like I'm not surprised when somebody who doesn't know has no social aptitude, you know, or aptitude, whatever, dealing with stuff when they do stupid things.
I think aptitude is the correct word, though, is it? Because they're inept. If you can be inept, you got to be apt.
Yeah, well, that's a very good point.
I'm Thank hoping
you. Somehow you figure it out. Right?
So here's an example of something. So we have the Goldfinger comedy shows on Thursday night. Now it's an 8:30 book pro show, and what I did was I want to get stages. So we offered open mics after. You know, and if you get a free entry, if you show up at 8 o'clock to sign in, yeah, we want you to be there to help support the room. That I'm not making that a secret, but you don't have to pay to get in. And the first 10, 15 people will perform. So something happened outside the club. I guess there was a patron at the club that was this island woman. She was very upset and rude, and she spit on the manager, and they filmed this, and somebody filmed it. And that's one thing, because it's viral, okay? It's a funny thing. But the comic had written on there something like, I only work at the finest venues. And he tagged the fucking venue. And I thought to myself, here's an educated person. They're smart. They're professional. What would make this person think that this is going to help my cause and help my venue?
You know, the only theory I have on all of this is that comedians are people generally, the successful ones or people that come up, or try it. I've been people really who've been pissed on their whole lives,
yeah,
right,
and have been voiceless or powerless to ever do anything mm-hmm. about it. They've been subjects of bullying, never in the right cliques and stuff like that. And my theory is that once they're getting some success on a stage, they have a forum, they're going to start getting back at everybody in the world that they perceive as having screwed them over.
And yeah. Sometimes and I think what it is.
Sometimes they overdo it.
Sometimes you know? People, too, they're not really all in. So when you're not all in, it's very easy to be flippant and not care because they're like, what do they care if they don't get invited back?
Yeah.
See, that's the difference with us. Why you're a full he's really a full contact fighter. This guy's no joke.
Right.
And you're gingerly tap dancing around people because you're all in. Right. I'm all in. Al, you're all with all the fixed costs.
I know,
and insurance
we're all in so long, we're almost all out. I mean, in 10 years, I'll be like...
I'm going to be doing open mics. How many people do I need to bring to my mausoleum? Well, I just want to know.
You know, here's a funny story. I get this a lot from comics. I don't do bringers. I don't bring people anymore. So let me explain something to you. Let me bring you into reality. You are bringing your entire career in comedy. And what do you mean? I don't have to do bringer shows or bring it all. So let me ask you a question. You mentioned Jim Gaffigan before, right?
Right.
Jim Gaffigan gets paid a certain amount of money to appear at the Borgata main room, right. Let's say. You know, the
he does the big room.
The big room. Right. He does what they call
upstairs.
The music box, whatever. He does the main auditorium there. They pay him X amount of dollars. Do you think they would pay Jim Gaffigan X amount of dollars to do the main room at the Borgata if he didn't bring... an right. audience to come see him?
Well, bring / draw.
Exactly.
Until you become a draw, you have to bring.
It's one or the other. I mean,
it's not the way it used to be. When we started, Al and I met. We did every open mic. So Al and I met at a club, Danielle's. We always right. talk about this.
With the Dave LaBarca. Yeah.
Dave LaBarca. Dave LaBarca here. Right. So Dave LaBarca had a lot of low-rent gigs, and we took them. And that's, in fact, how we met, because I think... Let's face it. How many, let's call it what it is, a spade a spade. Not a lot of people were so friendly to you.
That's
not
right.
a lot of people were friendly
Dave
to me.
Was friendly to me.
And we were friendly to each other on that
He wasn't
that
line. Friendly. No,
no. No,
no. No, but he was.
He was. He was nice to everybody.
He was a nice man.
And we met,
he is a nice
we
man
met
still.
Doing that. So people are like, why drive here? Why go to Danielle's? Because I met my friend and future employer
right.
at Daniels. You don't know who you're. When I was
you
at
don't
Catch-
know. Look, he wound up doing that for me. Then other comics saw that Steve was working for a club now in New York. For years, you
right.
were shut out of New York.
Right, I was totally
you
shut out.
You weren't part of the
persona non grata. That's correct.
Catch,
I didn't do
the
poker
improv.
Games.
Right, you didn't do the poker games. You weren't in any of that clique, and you weren't accepted. So all of a sudden, he's working in a city club. And the same thing happened to Bob Golub. You know Bob Golub?
Yeah, Bob's
going
to just talk to him
let
yesterday.
Let me tell you, all comedians can benefit from this story with Bob Golub. Okay, so Bob Golub came one day into New York Comedy Club, and he was looking around. And at that time, he only worked at Dangerfields. And at that time, Dangerfields had the reputation of being a road room in Manhattan. You know, that's how it got tagged, and it stuck with it for a while, for a long time. That's the rap it had from people. Even though you'd see a lot of guys working there, it still had that rep. So anyway, he wanted to work in another club in Manhattan, but nobody was having him. I gave him an opportunity because I was just starting my stand-up career, and I, like you, looked at it as a businessman. And I said to Bob, I'll start putting you up at this club. Maybe take me on some road gigs, you know? So he took me on some road gigs on the weekends and introduced me to this club owner in Washington, D.C., who owned a comedy chain called Garvin's. Remember Garvin's? They had eight or nine rooms at the time. The guy loved me, and he gave me, on my own, after that, 2 weeks of work a year at each of the eight clubs. Now I had 16 weeks all of a sudden
nice.
of paid gigs and 4 hours away in Washington and Maryland and wherever. So the thing of it is was he knew somebody in Florida. Her name was Ann Keel. Ann Keel ran Uncle Funny's in Kendall at the time. So I wound up getting a gig over there. And then Ann Keel, a couple of years later, wound up booking Jester's Comedy Club at the Trump Marina in Atlantic City. So now I got my first week middling in a casino in Atlantic City.
Right.
And then Bob moved to L.A. When he moved to L.A., he befriended Ross Mark, who at the time was booking the Evening at the Improv and the Improv Comedy Club in Vegas at the Riviera Hotel. I wound up, you know, Ross got to see me through Bob and booked me at the Improv and then booked me at the
Evening at the Improv.
Evening at the Improv. I did one of the last Evening at the Improv. So the point I'm trying to make is the first time Bob, I sort of told this story backwards, but the first time Bob took me on this gig, he said, Al, the pay is $200. You drive me and you get $200. So I said, okay, not a problem. Bob swears he doesn't remember this story because we talked about it not too long ago. I drove down there for the $200, and Don Siegel loved me and said, you did really great. Would you mind if I book you now on your own? And I said, if it's okay with Bob, I don't care. So he said, I'll book you. It's my club. I'll book you.
Right.
So he goes, would you mind working for the same $500? That's when a middle got paid $500 back in the
but you were only getting
200
from Bob.
Right.
Who's, by the way, both our best friends.
Right. So,
and real quick, just so our listeners will know, Bob Golub, and again, I just talked to him yesterday. We're talking because he's coming. He's going to be down here in April. He's in the famous scene in the beginning scene of Goodfellas.
Yeah. Right.
When this guy walks into the diner. Yeah, the mob just took his stuff, his
right.
truck, and he comes.
Right.
Hey, these, and again, this is the, don't get mad at me. I don't want the Al Sharpton to call me, but his lines were basically, hey, these two, did he drop the N-word?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, okay. He says, these two niggers just robbed my truck in Goodfellas, and that's a
right.
famous scene.
Right.
And a great, you know.
Yeah.
Mike Ivey, the comedian.
Oh,
said,
Mike
Ivey goes, that, hey, Bob, that wasn't in the script. I know you ad-libbed that. But I want to show, I'll
but
take.
Here's the point. The point is, I got screwed that first time. I didn't cry. I didn't complain.
You didn't cry. You didn't bitch.
I didn't bitch.
Not
I
only
didn't complain.
That.
I kept quiet. And
you ate a little shit.
I ate shit. And look what I got out of it.
The Evening at the Improv. And he got more than that. They're best friends.
Hey,
this is
important. Because some people will hear that story, and there's still some people going, well, that's bullshit. I would have They don't get it.
They don't get it.
Listen,
it's always paying an investment. It's an investment.
It is. And you know what? And because I put myself in your shoes, and I would, A, be more thankful of the person doing it for me. I'd be more thankful because without that, I wouldn't have had any of that opportunity.
Exactly.
And again, forget in hindsight. Now it's easier.
Bob really helped me out.
You didn't know at the time that you were going to, all that other stuff was going to come
from
that. Right,
exactly. And I was, you know what, in the end, Doug? I was ready to take that deal as it was presented to me by Bob. And if Bob made money, which he denies he didn't, but I know he did.
He definitely had to.
But you know what? He's entitled to it. He's a guy at that time that had 15, 20, 10 years, whatever, 15 years.
Well, I think you said it before. When you were on the phone with Al, you said it. You got to work through it. When Al got a little tight with you about whether you were going on Saturday night or not, and then you said, well, instead of saying, go fuck yourself, you said, let me just find the email. You sent the email, and you worked through it, as Al said. And then Al said, all right, you're right. You got the email. You got the spot.
Right.
So when Bob took the $300, but you got to remember, you got to be a bit of a hustler to make it in this business. Right. Anybody want to address that?
Yeah, no.
You got to be a little bit of a hustler.
Of course you do, and that's why.
And you got a best friend out of it. He's my best friend, too.
And you know what? Anything he has ever gotten, Dougie, he's brought me along into.
Right. He's the greatest, loyalist
he's
guy.
He's the loyalist guy.
I
got to
tell
world.
You a Bob story. So Bob is doing a gig, and he's told by Roger Paul to, listen, Bob, when you do this gig, it's like in Portland, somewhere where he's going to stand out. He's from Sharon, Pennsylvania. You know what I mean? He used to be a roofer. I mean, he was a boxer.
A roofer.
He's a roofer. He's going to stand out in wherever Roger Paul has sent him, Washington State or whatever. He's going to stand out. Roger tells him, listen, because Bob told me the story. He goes, please, just do me a favor. Go easy with this crowd. You know what I mean? Tone it down. Go easy. You cannot say this to me or Bob Golub.
Right.
So Bob says, Steve, he goes, come here, Steve, I got to show you this. We're in the house. He had the old answering machine. He goes, I kept the message like 5 years. You got to hear this. He puts on the message, and it's Roger Paul going, hello, Bob. However, yeah. Didn't I tell you to behave yourself when you went to Washington or Portland? Then why am I getting a message now? That you pulled your pants down.
And then he wants to know why the cruise ship thing didn't work for him.
Oh, but you got to love him. I got to tell you, you got to love the Bob Golubs, the Adam Leslies.
They're,
you know what I mean? You got to, come on, Al, talk about it. The guy did
characters.
Take a bottle. They're characters.
They're characters.
I miss these
Do
guys.
Do you know, even though he took that bottle
yes,
from the Adam Leslie,
you loved it in
I
a way.
Still talk to him after that because
yeah.
I'm a sucker for a reclamation project.
We love these
I just
guys.
Like the guy.
We're like John DeRestick calls them misfits. The guys today that walk in with their portfolios and their laptops.
They're boring.
They're so boring.
Yeah.
They're too organized. I like the train wrecks.
Yeah,
I'll be honest.
Yeah, I'm
I
downstairs
like
stealing toilet paper.
remember the old New York Comedy Club? It was a two-flight walk to the basement at the old New York Comedy Club. So one time, there was a bar on the first floor. This typical New York crowd. There's a guy passed out at the bottom of the stairwell.
Wait, correct. So, he fell down. He's passed out because he fell down a flight of stairs on the way to the next flight of stairs to go to the bathroom two flights below your comedy
right.
club.
And people were just walking over him.
They didn't give a shit. Nobody
Not one person gave a shit and said, there's a guy laying on the floor, call an ambulance, call the police. They just stepped over him and kept walking. Mike Buscetti was bringing up the ice at the time.
Right.
He was the busboy.
Oh, yeah.
Bringing up the ice, and he just walked right over him, didn't say it.
That's
say
another move. Bob Golub taking the pants down. So New York Comedy Club, and he's like, hey, Stevie, watch this. This is going to be funny and everything. He would do like Phil Collins and wet his hair.
Yeah.
He had like what they call a guinea T-shirt on.
Right.
And to do the Phil, I don't know why he had to pull his pants down to do this impression.
No, because everything in Bob's act was designed to pick up women.
Right.
So the reason why he went to the guinea tank top
he looked tough in
was
it.
He looked good and it showed off his muscles.
He was a fighter, right?
Then he pulled down his pants. He wanted to show off the other half. And then
afterwards,
he pulls down the pants, but pulls them down with. He makes a mistake. He's only supposed to be in his boxer shorts, but he pulls them down so tight and rapidly.
Everything comes off.
The tip, the head of his penis, is sticking out between the long white T-shirt, and everybody's just screaming and like, "What about this one?"
It's crazy.
The time at New York Comedy Club.
He's not going to get a word in edgewise.
Wait, you got to hear this. I bring Rob Falcone up, and before I bring Rob up, Rob goes to me, hey, he's all nervous. Hey, listen, I'm supposed to be doing something with Bill Cosby or something. I'm sending a tape to Bill. Bill, just do me a favor. Bring me right up. So I'm emceeing, and I don't know why these crazy guys who used to come to the club, I laughed and were sitting up front, and they always had things in a pocketbook. They brought like props and everything. And I said, enough with the fakakta props. I said, I'll tell you right now, I'll pull my pants down if you've got KY jelly or lube in there. The guy goes, ha! Like Gabby, reaches and pulls out the lube. I turn around, I drop my pants. Rob Falcone was getting pissed because I didn't bring him up and brought Al in the room. And as I'm pulling my pants down and facing the wall, I hear this voice from Al. Oh, my God! Marshall, what are you doing? Now, here's the club owner. We talk about tapping gingerly, and I've got my pants on my ankles, and he's in the room.
Well, how about the other time when you were in the room, and someone told me you were running late on a Saturday early show, and we had like 150 people down the block, and I came running in, and I was about to yell at you, and they go, ladies and gentlemen, there's the owner of the club, and I just took a
break. Oh, yeah. No, this is the great. He's got a packed first show. His wife is in the front row, I think, with her sister. God bless Carolyn. She loves me. And Al is hearing from every, because here's another thing about other comedians. 90% of them will sell you out in a second.
Rat finks.
And Al wants, they are rat finks, and they want to get the next show in, right? And Al comes in the room really pissed, and he looks at me, and he goes, what? He goes like, almost like, what the fuck is what he's looking at me? Are you doing, Marshall? And I go to everybody. Hi, everybody. That's the owner. He gets a round of applause. And then I go, good night.
That's crazy.
But we had so much. You got it. Yeah, we had so much fun misbehaving.
Part of what you're saying here is, and I think that's sometimes what people do, what they do.
Yeah,
they
get the spirit
they
of
think
this.
It. They think it's the enter, they think it's entertaining. You know, I worked one time with a comic, and I just met the person. And then when I walked off stage, they went back on stage, and they go, let's hear it for the fat guy. And I was like, I don't know this guy well enough.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, right. I understand why they were trying to do it. So I went to the person after. I'm like, dude, you don't know me well enough to make those kind of comments to me. But at the same time, like, you would make it. Anybody make it. You don't care because... It's like anything, like when you grow up with people, and I've been always in sports, right? I played soccer all my life. You would mess with people. It was part of it. You didn't, you know, and I don't know if somebody stole a bottle of my liquor, I'd be, you know what I mean? But that's the way it is.
Well, we know each other, so we also know our pressure points. So when Al and I do something to one another, we sort of know what not to say. But let's be honest, he is the, when I do Broadway Comedy Club, he's my boss. When I do Tavolino's, you're my boss. Then afterwards, you know, it's fun and games. But you do have to show some respect. When he came in and shot me that look, it was like I did go, but there's the owner, everybody. And everybody saw how pissed he was. Carolyn was laughing. And I just went, good night.
It's like, how can I be angry now? You know. Really,
yeah, in other words, like, could you have a little bit of charm? I mean, I know this guy. He gets pissed. But charm him a little. There's nobody that has a better sense of humor than Al.
There's no reason, like, in business, there's something, especially in our sales, we always heard the expression, sales cover a multiple of sins.
Yes.
In other words, if you bring it to the table, if you're a producer and you bring that much, little things that you do, people make mistakes, people that get sides, you know, sides, that things happen. But if you're bringing stuff to the table and you're a person of character, those things are overlooked.
Yeah, I'll tell you something about doing time, too. Like, the great thing about me, sometimes I go over the light.
That's your note. You're known for that,
I know,
that, right?
But here's the other thing. Al will go, Marshall's on stage. The act didn't show up or whatever. Let him. Remember we did the prom shows?
Yeah.
Now, when we first did the prom shows, the act would go up. today I was on the subway. You suck, you motherfucker. Right, you know. Oh, so let me, you ever notice when you're shopping for suck my dick? You know what I mean? So I learned
that he can handle all
so
that.
So I went up one night and one kid told me to suck my dick and I said, suck my dick? Your mother's gonna be sucking my dick and licking my ball. Ah, they all went wild, they love me. So I figured it out. Then Al had me MC and it started to happen that I would do 20. Then bring the act on for 10. He's out. Just give him 10. You go up and do another 20.
Right. And but when people started seeing you doing this they at stole New that. York. No, but other clubs then would start booking him. Yeah. He started doing Dangerfields, and he started doing this one and that one. So in the end, you know.
You co-signed me. That's how I got
exactly.
Dangerfields.
You know,
said, what happened was Al called up and he said, listen, you're using all my acts. He had no benefit. He was making no money. He goes, you're using all my acts. Why don't you take Steve Marshall? He spoke up for me. He validated me. He goes, how could you take all these acts? But I want to say a very important thing about that. So I learned how to handle a prom crowd, which I will swear, I'm the prom king. Everybody after that who's cursing, they're all copying me.
Yeah.
There was a young kid, and Al said, put him on for 10 minutes. You're very I want to talk about your generous moments, okay? And I said, Al, I got a good vibe about this kid, and he did very well on the prom show. So he goes, this is true. He goes, listen, give him $10. You know what I mean? We gave this kid $10 to do 10 minutes every prom show, and I would do like 90 minutes every show. Right. That's when, then 90. So Al would be like, yeah, he blows the light, but he does 90 minutes for like $18. So the kid was Judah Friedlander.
Oh, really?
That was Judah Friedlander doing spots for $10. And I'll go back to the old New York. Here's Saturday's lineup, New York Comedy Club. Wanda Sykes, Daryl Hammond, Damon Wayans is going to drop in.
Tracy Morgan.
That's how I met Tracy Morgan and became best friends with Tracy Morgan.
Tracy Morgan, Wanda Sykes. And some little kid that everybody made fun of because he was so young and so short. What was his name? Oh, Kevin Hart.
Really? And Dan Natterman.
Dan Natterman.
I used to host... Talk about emceeing, too. I don't want to MC. You don't want to MC? I was already headlining on the road. I was emceeing three shows a night. Dan Natterman was on every... Our first show was like an open mic bringer show on a Saturday night. He was on every one of them. One night, Al turns to me. I must have been at the club from 6 p.m. to midnight.
Right.
And you turned to me and I remember you going and you go, you know, I just learned something about you, Marshall. You just work 6 hours here. You really do this because you love it.
He does love it.
You know, it's amazing when people say that. Like,
I do love it.
For example, at Tavolino's, I feel it's a New York in a sense where, you know, Florida and other places, newbies open the show, right? They just hire regular local comics to do it.
Right.
And then, but when I ever go to New York, I was always amazed because every time I see a host, they were phenomenal.
They got to be the best person. And the host has got to be the best.
And so when, you know, like I'll reach out to somebody and say, I need a host. Like, I'd rather feature. I'm like, listen, I don't think you get it. The importance of a host, the feature is the easiest spot.
Yeah. That's what they want is the easy. They want to fix fights.
Now, I have a guy in New York that's been emceeing for me for 25 years.
Chris Murphy.
Chris Murphy. This guy is not only my MC, he runs the show.
Yeah.
He knows when to take it a little longer.
I love
he knows,
Chris.
He knows when to take it a little shorter. He knows, he actually studies the audience in advance to know who he's going to work on and work with.
Doesn't he keep like almost a spreadsheet?
Oh my God,
he's got all the statistics.
People do it on a computer. He writes it all down. I mean, God.
Last night we did a show in Cape Coral, Florida. Right, I brought two comics with me. One guy opened the middle, and then myself, the headline. And we came to a dead room. It's at a restaurant in a place called Anthony's on the Boulevard in Cape Coral. Frank Del Pizzo books it. Mm-hmm. So I said
he's
great.
A funny guy too.
Yeah, Frank's a great guy. So we get there, no music, nothing like that from a deadpan. And you know, the guy Brian Corner, very funny young comic here. I brought him to open the show, and he was like, oh, you know, and like I would be. You know, like, oh, I got to just start. There's no music and stuff. So I looked. I go, let me introduce you. Right? Just let me introduce you. I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, that's not my part to do. Because all I cared about was that show being a good show.
Right. Right.
You know? So I'm not going to sit there, oh, it's not my duty to do this. I went up and said, hey, everybody. I messed around. Got them going. And I accept. And I loved it because, A, I love it. And, you know, I want the show to be good. And number B, because to me, this is an awkward moment. I'm going to put myself in a bit of an awkward situation because I thrive on that. You know, I look at so many people, like, everything in life I've ever earned or learned, especially in the ring, the only way that you're going to learn how to defend yourself is by getting popped in the face, feeling the pain of life. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why this, in this current, we're going to wrap this up, but that's why I've been concerned with our current society in this country after the last 8 years of the last administration of having excuses for failure. Be expecting, like when people say to me, oh, I want student loans should be written off. You know, all right, so what you're saying is, all right, I get it. The person goes to school, borrows money, agrees to that, understands the importance of borrowing the money to go to college, doesn't, let's say for some reason or the other, let's not try to blame society. Let's try to find individual responsibility here. This person doesn't find work, can't pay their bills, and now they want everybody else to just write that shit off because their inability to go and find good work or whatever it is.
Right.
Right? And I understand that there's, like in anything, there's always a percentage of people that just had bad breaks, you know, whatever, something happened. But for the majority, 90%, 80-something percent of the people are just not cutting it. And now we're just going to write off the debt. Now we're just going to allow them to say, no, it's no problem that you didn't stand up to your part of the bargain.
Listen, I'll give you a great example and multiply it probably all over the country. My daughter dated a guy that he took out all sorts of student loans. He got a lot of debt. And, you know, all he does with his money that he gets from work is he's in the sneaker business, you know, buying sneakers and selling them online. And I would always tell her, look, he's got to do something about this debt. It's right. not going away. And it's going up and up and up. And you know, what is he waiting for? He's waiting probably for the government to say, somebody, write it off. You don't have to pay it anymore.
Find an excuse. Like, you know, it's just nuts. And here's we're going to wrap the show up. Be responsible. Worry about yourself. Nobody wants to hear your opinions of how they think the government should be run. Okay? You know, I'm tired of this nonsense on Facebook. I unfriended and blocked about a dozen people in the last month. You know what I mean? I've had it.
I had a comic call me a moron the other day. Didn't even know me. Doesn't know me. Never spoke to me. I don't know who he is. I posted something like 3-4 days ago about wanting to see something as horrific as evidence that somebody made a comment. And he goes, you know, Al, you sound like a moron. Like, who are you? I don't even know who you are. I've never met you, spoken to you. Who are you to call just anybody a moron like
these
that?
These things won't happen if we bring the purge.
You know, I don't know what the purge means, but I do feel...
One day where you can legally kill somebody without any recourse.
Wow.
With our luck, somebody will make a mistake. Oh, you're Al Martin and not Al Martino.
Anyway, guys, that's all we have time for on the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. I'm so glad you guys came
special
in today.
Day.
Steve Martin.
Special day.
Al Martin. Steve Martin's here.
Steve Martin and Al Marshall.
He did it.
All right. We got purged.
Hold on a sec. I should have held my notes up when I figured this out.
Steve, very good aptitude.
Steve Marshall and like Al Martin. Follow Steve at
SteveMarshallComedy.com, SteveMarshallComedy.com. I'm also on Twitter at the same time as the president, usually at 5 a.m., at Don't Behave. Anything Don't Behave is me. And can I say this? Without Al Martin, I wouldn't even be able to have these sites. And without you, Dougie, supporting me as a brother and a friend. I love you both.
You got it. Al?
BroadwayComedyClub.com, GreenwichVillageComedyClub.com, and my music room, 53above.com.
There you go, guys. Tonight I'm going to be in Fort Myers, Florida, Old Soul Brewery. Saturday I'll be at the Jackie Knights Comedy Club in St. Augustine. And Sunday I'll be home waiting for my wife to come back from a cruise all week. Yeah, honey, I'm ready for you to come home. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter, Wake Up Dougie. Follow me at Twitter and on Instagram, Dougie Dangerous. And join our fan page on Facebook. Guys, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week right here at the same spot. Take care.
People on earth, can you hear me? Came a voice from the sky on a magical night. And in the colors of a thousand sunsets, they travel to the world on a silvery light. The people of the earth stood waiting, watching as the ships came one by one. Setting fire to the sky as he landed, carrying to the world children of the sun. Children of the sun.
beam of sound from inside. Thick beam of light hit the ground. Journey of a thousand lifetimes with the children of